Let's start talking about Jack Nicklaus as though Nick O'Leary is the famous one. And this is the guy who's just kind of riding on Nick O'Leary's coattails.
Yeah.
Well, Jonah Bronstein's here. I just want to finish that thought.
He's tied for second right now. Four under.
Just hit another
green. I did not see whether he's wearing a glove.
I bet he is.
Nick O'Leary doesn't wear gloves. Do you know that?
I've never heard that. Did you know that Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard?
What year?
2005 he graduated.
I missed him there.
John Beilein's from used to coach at ECC.
Yeah.
A lot of good ones out there.
Chris Hogan played lacrosse.
What is this like? Is my spout out all the facts, you know?
All the things that just get driven into the ground every time this person is on a broadcast. Chris Drury pitched in the Little League World Series.
God, yeah.
Nate Oates coached, what's his name, at UB in high school.
What's his name? Maybe they should have repeated that.
March Madness is over now. My mind has moved on from basketball. Wes Clark. That whole UB in the tournament thing can be very fleeting.
Yeah.
So, forgive me.
UB women finished 21st in the country. USA Today coaches poll.
Sweet 16.
The highest ever. They earned it. And, it's great news for UB women. What a great year. We've talked about it on this show. I take pride in the fact that I think this show talked about it more than any other show here in town regarding college basketball. And we were on it pretty early. Like, as soon as the Bills season was over, everybody obviously gets engrossed with the Bills, and that's the dominant theme, and you don't really have a lot of time to get into some of the other stories that are going on. But I think pretty quickly, right in January, after the Bills were out of the playoffs, we started talking about college hoops on the show. And thanks to Jonah Bronstein, who I think is the sharpest mind on college basketball here in town, and also he overlaps with the high school scene. He knows the guys who are coming up and the women and the women's game. He's covering it. He's covering the community college, Niagara Community College, and he's out at all the different schools.
Can we talk about...
No. Can you hang on 1 second?
I'm saying his bracket.
All right. I just want to throw a bouquet at Jerry Sullivan also because, of course, Jerry's not here today, but throughout the basketball season, I think that we had a very impressive... impressive offerings when it came to college basketball. And Jerry Sullivan had Loyola of Chicago in his Final Four. And Jonah Bronstein picked the final.
He did.
I did.
Came in the 99th percentile on ESPN.com, or something like, what, 155,000
place?
That's the other shoe that needs to drop. Yeah, 99th percentile, but still... 149,000 people finished better than you.
But I won the local bracket. Dave DeLuca.
Oh, yeah.
BM Blitz contributor.
From Channel 2?
12 of us. Yeah, Channel 2.
And might I add, we also had Mike McDonald on the show a couple times, who is a sharp basketball mind himself.
We've got great basketball guests. Mark Bortz, we should get him back in here.
Yeah, we should, actually. Lindsay Darktan. I'll spit it out, because I was in the middle of saying her name and then... planning out what I was going to say next about Lindsay, because maybe it's me. I thought she was going to be on the show today. Maybe she's not. Maybe it's a scheduling mistake by the guy who runs this show.
Was she here last
week?
Which
would be me. No, 2 weeks ago.
Did you tweet her name in your tweet? So maybe she'll be reading it and realize that.
I'm sending out the Lindsay D'Arcangelo bat signal.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hopefully she's on the show today, because I wanted to talk about the women's Final Four. The games were incredible. And that's not to say that Lindsay can only talk women's basketball. I think that's something that gets pigeonholed, is that we have the lady on the show to talk about women's sports. But no, she can talk about the men's game, too. She writes for Bleacher Report. She does a lot of incredible work. ESPNW, which also, I guess, is a pigeonhole thing. She writes for Vice Sports.
Plenty to talk about with women's hoops as well.
The women's Final Four was better than the men's Final Four.
Well, that's what we were going to talk about. Lindsay and I were discussing that throughout the week, and those two buzzer beaters, it's been pretty incredible. And to see, and Lindsay has been super vocal that UConn's dominance is good for women's basketball. A lot of people believe it's bad because it doesn't, because it crushes the competition, it pulverizes other programs all throughout the country, and that nothing can measure up to UConn. But Lindsay's stance on that is that everybody should aspire to be UConn and to be competitive, and it raises all boats that that's what you need to shoot for. And then, of course, Notre Dame knocks them off in the semifinal.
I would say, not that it's bad for the sport, but I don't think the type of blowouts they had in most of their games this season and winning four straight national titles is necessarily good for women's basketball. What's been good is they've gotten beat the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So really, Connecticut's lack of relative dominance has, I think, been a boon for the sport.
Lindsay D'Arcangelo is sending me a note that she thought she was not on the show today. We had a discussion.
She can call in.
She absolutely can. In fact, I'll...
If she has a phone, we don't know if she does.
Why would she not have a phone?
Or if our phones were.
The thing about this discussion, I wanted Lindsay to know that, and I should let the listeners know also about this, is that in the second hour, we're going to be talking about WrestleMania 34. And that was actually one of our more popular shows last year when we had Lex Luger and Beth Copeland on to talk about WrestleMania 33. And so we're coming back again, and we're going to have a couple of outside-the-box guests later on in the show to break down Sunday night's matchups. 5 hours. WrestleMania 34 is going to start at 7 o'clock, and it's supposed to go for 5 hours.
It's actually going to start at 5.
Right. There's a pre-match, or what do you, not pre-game. What would you call it in wrestling?
They call it the pre-event. Pre-show.
That goes out for 2 hours.
Kickoff. But there's matches on that. Like, if you're in the building, unless you show up late, that show starts at 5 o'clock and goes till almost midnight.
That's a lot of wrestling. It's a lot of bang for your buck.
Actually, when I watched it last year, by the end of it, the main event's supposed to be the most exciting match, and I'm like, let's get this over with. Because after, I didn't even watch the pre-show, but after 5 hours, I think I covered a Sabres game earlier in the day, which is probably why I was tired and sick of watching things, but this year I'm not going to watch WrestleMania from start to finish. 5 hours is too much.
Mike, go ahead and just give us the rundown of what you're... Mike is barely listening to the show. He was caught cheating last week. He was looking at Instagram photos or something of...
Well, I apologize. Right, but now you're more interested in golf.
You picked that up.
So what's going on with Jack Nicklaus here on the par 3?
Just birdied the last hole, missed the... Or sorry, he parred the last hole and missed the birdie putt, so... Remains 4 under.
All right, well, I see that Tom Watson is on the 7th hole. Is this 9 holes, or do they play 18?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Because it is a par 3. A lot of times you'd go with a 9 holes on the par 3. But if Tom Watson's on the 7th hole here, that means we got a long way to go.
Yeah.
And I'd rather not hear play-by-play of...
In fact, it may even violate some of the, the rules.
Yeah. You just can't give play-by-play. You can give updates.
Like, direct play-by-play.
Well, there you go.
I heard some awful Las Vegas radio when I was out there during the NCAA tournament. That's when I was the first 2 days of the tournament, and I was out there doing the O.J. Simpson story. And they call it, I think, sportsbook radio or something like that, which I think is kind of cool. Like, they follow the spreads and all this stuff. And there was it was a buzzer beater type game on Thursday morning, and it was just four guys yelling at they're watching TV, and they're just they're talking into a mic. So there's a buzzer beater, and they just go, "Oh my god!" It's like, why wouldn't I just turn it over onto that game?
Yeah.
Of course, if you're in your car, which is where I was, but still, it was the worst radio. I was listening. I was, in effect, listening to guys watching television.
Yeah.
And I would assume most people listen to radio in their cars, unless they're sitting at their desk at work and they can't watch TV per se, and they're watching the Tim Graham show on Facebook Live.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'd be listening to people. I would listen to something else if I were in my car. I wouldn't want to listen to people watching TV. In fact, it was so bad, and for those of you who are familiar with the Howard Stern show, I thought about sending the podcast to the guys who produce the show, to Sal or Richard or whatever, and because they play really bad radio. Like when people have coughing fits on the air or like bloopers, I think it would have fallen right into that category. It was so bad.
You know, I'm thinking that's kind of a thing now, though. People, a lot of times I see it as Twitter shows.
Yeah.
People will watch NBA basketball or the NCAA title game, and it might be blog writers or somebody, and you want their analysis instead of the commentators who actually watch a lot of TV while they're actually there at the game. They can pick their eyes up and watch the game. But you talk to broadcasters, they watch a lot of the screen because they want to describe what the viewers are seeing, not necessarily what I'm seeing that you can't see.
Well, people like the fan perspective. I mean, they had it on ESPN on the college football championship where they had the Clemson cast in the Alabama station. Same thing with the Final Four, or at least the championship game with Michigan and Villanova. People like that. They want to.
Yeah.
They love watching the celebration videos in people's living rooms and.
Yeah, but you guys are talking about two there's critical differences with what you're describing, and it has to do with video. You can see these things as opposed to listening in your car. People trying to describe something they're watching on television.
And modulated audio and.
Just yelling into the mic. I can't believe it! Oh my God! Well, why don't you tell me what I shouldn't be believing?
The availability of video has skyrocketed the last 5 or 10 years. I mean, when I was in college, even you had
like
to listen.
2 years ago?
Yeah, it's a while ago now. Talking close to 10 years ago.
Wow, our little mic's getting all grown up.
I know, right? But there was no Periscope or any of that. It's not like you could just pull up your phone and watch somebody live. There's no Facebook Live or
now every app goes live.
Yeah, hey, Instagram Live.
Let's talk about the Patriots. Let's get into this. Lindsay D'Arcangelo, we're going to hear from her in the second segment.
Rodak.
We're going to get her on the horn, and we're going to talk some
Crooked Rodak.
Women's basketball and also the Final Four, men's and women's. The men's were dog matchups, man. The women were impressive. So we have Patriots expert Mike Rodak here in the studio. The Patriots homer that he is. And the Patriots making a couple of moves. Well, really, I guess one move, and we're expecting them to make more. With the acquisition of another first-round pick. Yesterday, they trade Brandon Cooks to the Rams for the number 23 overall pick. So the Patriots now have number 23, 31, 43, and 63. Four of the top 63 picks in this year's draft, and that's incredibly unusual for the Patriots, and I'm taking a little bit of this from Warren Sharp, who does great, follow him on Twitter. It's analytic, but it's a little bit, it's not too obtuse. Just a great Twitter feed. What is it? Is it Sharp Football?
Mm-hmm.
At Sharp Football. And he was pointing out that over the past 3 years, from picks 1 to 59, the Patriots have only taken one player earlier than 60th overall over the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else has fewer than four picks in that range. So the Patriots have been maintaining this excellence without really reloading, so to speak. Just for perspective, the average NFL team has had 5.5 picks between 1 and 59 over the past 3 years. The Cleveland Browns have the most with 9. They're going to pick up some more. New Orleans and Tennessee have had 8 apiece. Buffalo, for the record, 5. So right about the average. But the Patriots down to just one pick between 1 and 59. That was Malcolm Brown, a pretty good player. He's been a 3-year starter, 32nd overall, drafted in 2015. But beyond that, they need to replace Danny Amendola. They need to replace their left tackle, Nate Solder. They need to maybe replace Rob Gronkowski. They're certainly going to have to replace Brandon Cook's role because he just got dealt away. He stretched the field for them. So all kinds of question marks with the Patriots. But how might this impact the Buffalo Bills, Mike Rodak?
Well, it's all about quarterback because the Bills are obviously in the market to trade up. I think we all know that. And there's other teams in the market to trade up. The Dolphins, maybe. The Cardinals, maybe. And other teams could crop up. The Chargers are hosting some quarterbacks, but I don't think anybody really considered the Patriots to be in the mix of teams that could be in on a Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson. I think maybe they thought of them as, you know, going to sign or going to draft Kyle Uletta from Richmond, maybe in the mid rounds. I saw that as a good fit. Maybe not anymore. The Patriots could be swinging for the fences if they do end up using these picks on a quarterback. And I know a lot of people saw this trade go down last night and they thought, oh, well, the Patriots are stockpiling picks for an Odell Beckham trade. I just don't see that. I mean, if you're not paying Brandon Cooks top wide receiver money, then you're certainly not paying Odell Beckham, who has a lot more question marks off the field. That's not a Bill Belichick move at all.
And does have the type of ability that could make him foreseeably the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL.
Right.
And whereas Brandon Cooks is, you know, less than.
And it's not going to be a one-year rental. I mean, that wouldn't make sense to give up what it's going to take to pry him away from the Giants, who apparently have asked for two first-round picks. But that's, you know, sort
although,
of a typical
Mike,
asking
just to
price.
Be devil's advocate, if Belichick and Kraft and Tom Brady, they know that they don't have many chances left. If this is their way of stocking up the offense to go for one last run,
I don't think that's how they think. I think Kraft thinks more long term. It's not like he's older. He's going to be 77 this year, but his son's going to own the team after that. I don't think he looks at it as a short term proposition like that. He knows that he needs to find a solution long term. I think that was probably part of the Josh McDaniels decision there. And then the next question is quarterback, and I think there's, you know, probably some feelings around there that they lost a good one in Jimmy Garoppolo, and maybe they regret that to some extent, and they need to find the next young quarterback who's going to replace Tom Brady. And to get a first round pick on a 4-year rookie contract, maybe a 5-year contract with that option, if he's a high enough pick, then that buys you some time with Tom Brady and trying mm-hmm. to figure out what's the next step. So I think it makes all the sense in the world for the Patriots being on a quarterback, and obviously that directly affects the Bills and potentially the asking price for some of those higher picks.
All right, we need to take a break, but something to think about. What could the Patriots acquire in return if they were to deal that number 23, 31? Let's even say they want to dabble into their second-round picks to move up. And then they throw in Rob Gronkowski. What if the Patriots trade Rob Gronkowski and they include him in a package with picks? They could pretty much get
anything,
whatever they want,
whatever quarterback they want, unless somebody is hell bent on getting that quarterback and they're going to stay put. Cleveland, for instance, with picks 1 and 4. But anyway,
or are they set on a quarterback too?
They might have the guy that they want, and they know that he's not going to go first or second.
Right.
You know, you do your draft intel. You're talking with the other GMs, have just met. They were all together at the NFL owners' meetings just last week. Everybody's together. They're talking. Who knows? Some gamesmanship going on. If they feel comfortable that their guy's going to be if their guy's the third quarterback that's going to come off the board, then maybe they don't have to go all the way up. But the idea of trading Rob Gronkowski is not as outlandish as it would have seemed just a couple of months ago. And we'll get into that later in the show, and also Lindsay Darkangelo on College Hoops. After this on the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Welcome back to the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. We found our wayward guest. She was playing hooky today. She thought she was given the day off, but no, I wanted her to come in today, talk about women's Final Four, how much better it was than the men's Final Four. And she just decided not to show up today. There was actually a miscommunication. We go back and look at our messages to each other, and I was telling her, because I didn't know, I was gauging her interest in pro wrestling. I was saying, look, Lindsay, if you don't want to come on the show, you don't have to. I used the pun, feel free to tap out, which I thought was quite clever. And I didn't realize that she had tapped out. But we just went on talking about something else. So, Lindsay, thanks for calling in on the show. I want to have your thoughts on this.
Yes, definitely.
So,
not a problem.
Give me your rundown of the college hoops. Give us your analysis of the weekend and the semifinals and the finals. The women's beat the men's asses in terms of competition level and the storylines. And let's also get into UConn. UConn doesn't seem to be so bad for basketball now than it did 4 days ago.
Well, that was always a joke of an argument to begin with. But talking about the Final Four is, yeah, I mean, I hate to make it a competition because it shouldn't be. You know, people should just be able to enjoy both the men's and the women's equally. I hate to say that the women's Final Four kicked the men's asses, as you put it, but it's true.
And the other thing, Lindsay, I agree that you should be able to enjoy them both, and I did. In fact, I even watched a replay of the Notre Dame-UConn finish, which they showed Saturday morning, I think it was, or Sunday morning. They showed it again.
Yeah, it was that good.
And it was that good, and I watched the last, 3 minutes of regulation and the overtime, and I knew what was going to happen, and it was still, and I rarely do that with sports, because when you know what's going to happen, what's the point of watching a replay? But I do think that the women need to constantly leverage against the men, at least until more people take notice, just to say, hey, look, you know, just because people dismiss it right out of hand. They just write it off immediately as it's lesser than, it's beneath me, I'm a sports fan, I don't want to watch these women play because they're not as good as the men. Well, you need to sometimes say or point out when they are, when it does, when that criteria needs to get obliterated every now and then.
Yes, yes, definitely. And the most common thing that I always hear that men say is that women's basketball is boring. And there is no way, if you are a true basketball fan, that you could have watched the women's Final Four this weekend and thought it was even remotely boring. I mean, let's flip the coin, because the men's tournament, the men's semifinal games and the final game, it was boring. It was ho-hum. I mean, Villanova ran away with that. And that's what we usually see on the women's side, right? We usually see UConn, as you had mentioned, run away with the games and get ahead. But there was none of that. There was drama. There was last-second shots. There were overtime games. I actually feel sorry for the guys who decided not to watch it because of their initial bias against women's basketball.
We're in conversation with Lindsay Darkangelo. You've seen her work on Voice. That's only my second screw up. It's both of my I've gotten tongue tied both times talking about Lindsay and for Vice Sports. And you haven't had your Bleacher Report debut yet, right?
No, I'm working on a pretty cool feature for that I can't really talk about. Lots of back story work to be done. So
I'm vaguely familiar with it, and I'm looking forward to it. I don't know all the details, but I know the basic, I know the broad strokes of it, and I'm looking forward to it. So that's going to be Lindsay Darkangelo's Bleacher Report debut. Keep an eye out for that. You've also seen her work at ESPNW. Oh, yeah, the Dark Angel. That's kind of like, that gets into our, that's like what plays in the arena right before you walk out to the ring.
I like it. I like it. That would be my wrestling. Like, that's my pro wrestling thing right there.
The Dark Angel.
Angel, yes.
So, but Lindsay, let's get into the UConn discussion a little bit here, because we have talked about it on the show, but it was not as in-depth as I wanted it to be. And here we are after the fact, and I think maybe people would have listened to what you had to say about UConn a week or two ago and rolled their eyes, because UConn was just steamrolling people and making them look silly, and now they've got that loss. They didn't finish undefeated. It was a shocking, not only that they lost, but it was in such a fantastic way for Notre Dame to win that game. Give us your thumbnail account of why UConn is good for women's basketball, and then we'll go from there.
Well, my whole thing is, you know, it's that it's always that same old story, right? You have a team that is just constantly beating everybody down and getting all the recruits, and every other team across the college landscape, that's what they shoot for. You know, it raises the level of competition. It doesn't disintegrate it. And so what you've seen is other teams just lifting their level of play, especially against UConn in the tournament when things are so heightened. All you need is one game. Just one game to win in advance, or in Notre Dame's case, to win a championship. I think UConn's been good for women's basketball because it's forced everybody else to just level up. And the other thing, I saw another argument, I forget what website it was, but it was about the conference that UConn plays in. And if they were in a different conference, they may not have gone undefeated. They may have played higher quality teams. And so there's that argument. But I think what you see is just, you know, on any given day, on that same old cliche quote, any given Sunday, you know, a team can lose. And this is what Gino Auriemma was worried about. You know, he constantly has been saying it all year. Yeah, being undefeated is great, but going into the tournament, it's almost good to have one or two losses before you go in, because there's just that threat of once you're in a close game, you know, could his kids pull it out? And Notre Dame was just better. And they hit that last shot. Enrique, I'm going to say her name wrong because I always do. Aglukliame, someone help me out.
I just pointed at Jonah Bronstein to see if he could bail him out, and he just gives me the head shake like, I can't do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, see what I'm saying?
How about you, Rodak?
Enrique Ungunliwe, I believe it is. I could be a little bit off there. I know her first name is Enrique.
I gotta get my pronunciation.
She's a house. She's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and we still can't say her name.
How cool is that?
That is pretty awesome.
How cool is that? Because that rarely happens. That rarely happens that you see a women's college basketball player on the cover of Sports Illustrated, especially after Final Four weekend.
And you know what? That probably doesn't happen if along the way Notre Dame does not beat UConn. Because there was something special about beating undefeated UConn that made that much more of a transcendent moment. Because I know people were waking up the next day, people who, as we know by the ratings, a lot of people don't watch women's basketball, and were finding out, wait, what happened? UConn got beat? And they're like,
the
yeah.
The ratings are growing, though, Tim. Ratings are getting better.
I know it, and they should. But then the next question is, not only did UConn get beat, but you have to see how they got beat, or you need to go mm-hmm. find the footage of how they got beat. The one thing, too, about UConn, and I know you kind of touched on it there, but there's a bit of an evil empire style image that UConn has. And I think sports need those teams, whether it be the New England Patriots, the New York Yankees, you know, Notre Dame football, those teams that are both loved and hated by you know, to Tom Brady, the people who you love to see lose. And I think that UConn getting that, you know, going in there undefeated, but there was just an expectation. They were just going to breeze right to the final, and this and that buzzer beater in overtime from Notre Dame just really made it more of a household moment.
Yeah, and even having it come down to a last-second shot, I mean, even having the opportunity. I mean, they didn't blow Notre Dame out, you know. It was a close game from the tip. And the other thing, too, like, my brother said to me, you know, well, UConn gets all the recruits. You know, you want to go play for UConn. I was like, well, there's two kinds of players, right? You get the recruits that want to go play for Geno and be part of that program, which is totally understandable. And then you have the other players, like Enrique, who go to Notre Dame and say, I want to beat them. I want to be the team. I want to be on the team that beats them.
I did a story. Oh, go ahead. No, finish.
No. I was ending my point.
Well, I was just going to say, you mentioned about UConn and how Geno Auriemma went in there into that game, or into the tournament, I should say, thinking, I wish we had a loss somewhere along the way. I recall when the Patriots were in 2007, right, were going for their undefeated season. I was at the Palm Beach Post, and my boss, the sports editor there at the time, Nick Michella, says, we need to come up with a story on being on the verge of history, an undefeated type thing. And I was trying to think of an outside-the-box way to approach that story. And I interviewed Larry Owings, who was the guy who beat Dan Gable. Dan Gable had been undefeated as a wrestler throughout high school and through all but his last match as a senior in college. And he lost. He even had cut a promo for ABC's Wild World of Sports ahead of time because it was taped that said, hey, tune in on Sunday to watch me finish my career undefeated. Michael Spinks against Larry Holmes when Larry Holmes was going for Rocky Marciano's undefeated boxing record. And I talked to Jerry Tarkanian about his UNLV team that eventually got beaten by Duke. And his thing to me was that he couldn't stress to his players enough that they needed to be careful because they'd go into a ranked opponent, let's say 22nd ranked, whatever, and they'd blow him out by 30. And he'd be like, look, guys, you can't, this team's really good. After a while, the players start tuning you out as the coach because they know how good they are. And I wonder, I don't know if UConn's culture allows that to happen. UNLV was known as a bunch of outlaws. I'm guessing UConn isn't that. But still, I wonder if the players just start tuning Geno Auriemma out after a certain point because they were that good.
Right, and Wright Thompson, who I think is one of the best feature writers I've ever read, he wrote a feature on Geno before the tournament, before the Final Four anyway, and it was in ESPN, the magazine, and he said that, Geno said that, these girls, they don't know how to lose, like they don't, and I mean like they don't understand what a close game is like and what the grit it takes to pull it out, and he was worried about that. He was very concerned about that, and it looks like, you know, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it was shocking. But I think good for women's basketball this weekend, I think.
Great,
you know,
for women's
basketball. You look back on certain times, and, you know, when women's basketball started to gain a foothold in the Olympics, you go back to Rebecca Lobo becoming a star at a time when UConn was dominant and ESPN was looking for cheap content, I think, really, back mm-hmm. in the 90s. And then all mm-hmm. of a sudden ESPN's like, hey, we have content here that we can put on the air. And we can showcase this basketball program that's pretty much in our backyard in Bristol, Connecticut. And UConn Stores is not that far away, and kind of forcing the issue in a good way. ESPN saying, let's take a look at this women's college basketball, and then all of a sudden the women's tournaments start to become moneymakers. Well, at least in terms of broadcast rights, anyway. Yeah, the arenas are kind of empty, but the conferences make money off their women's basketball, and they owe obviously much of that to UConn and to Pat Summitt at Tennessee. But and now Notre Dame, I think you're now looking at probably more schools, obviously, are going to be mentioned in the same breath as UConn, and that's the way it needs to be for women's basketball to get better, and that's the point you're trying to make.
Well, yeah, and the thing about Notre Dame, too, I just want to say is that Moffitt McGraw had a roster of seven players, I think she rotated, just because there were she had so many injuries. I think she had like five players with ACL injuries who were recruits, and to beat UConn with seven main players that in itself she needs to get more credit for.
I also think that there should be a Title IX rule that there must be a college men's basketball program's coach that is named Muffet. It should be mandated.
I mean,
the NCAA.
That's an awesome coaching name.
Absolutely. Muffet McGraw.
Muffet McGraw.
It's like a cartoon character. Like, helps take a bite out of crime. What was that? What's that dog?
McGriff.
McGruff the crime dog.
McGriff. Yeah.
That's right. Lindsay, thanks for joining us. I know that you're out gallivanting around. I had to corral you, find you, drag you onto the show, kicking and screaming. Thanks for coming on and giving us your thoughts, and hope we'll see you maybe next week or the week after.
Yeah,
we'll work it out.
Definitely.
We'll negotiate it, and we'll put it in clear terms.
We'll get our messaging. We'll get our messaging down.
All right.
Better.
Lindsay D'Arcangelo, everybody. We're going to come back and talk more about the Patriots with the Big Crooked and his infatuation with all things Foxborough. And what's going to happen in the draft. We're going to get into more football. And, of course, coming up later on the show, WrestleMania 34. We're going to get into the matches, man. We're going to check this stuff out. Ric Flair was going to be on the show last week, and then he had a travel thing come up.
Woo!
I've reached out to Ric Flair again today. I haven't heard from him, but I'm serious. That's not a joke. We could hear from Ric Flair at some point.
That'd be cool.
On the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Welcome back to the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan, and we were going to talk about Jack Nicklaus today in terms of only Nick O'Leary's grandfather, right? Well, we need to find a different way, because we need to find out who this other grandson is. Jack Nicklaus has another grandson who just hit a hole-in-one in the par 3 contest at the Masters. Now, get this. He's caddying for Jack Nicklaus. And so Jack Nicklaus lets him take his tee shot, because this isn't an official thing. It's for fun. It's for a chance for fans to come out and see the legends. And there's some celebrities, I think, involved in this, too, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like the Tony Romos or those people who like to tinker around with golf. So Jack Nicklaus lets his grandson, who's caddying for him, take the tee shot on number 8. And he hits a hole-in-one. And it's his first hole-in-one of his life. And so Jack Nicklaus cries on the air. It's nationally televised. It's on ESPN. And the Nicklaus family just can't lose unless they play for the Bills.
He wasn't wearing gloves.
He was not?
Gary Nicklaus was not.
Well, because
not
he was
gloves.
Caddying.
Right.
He doesn't need to wear gloves.
But I would assume his cousin Nick, because Jack has 22 grandchildren, but he also does not wear gloves. Did you know that?
Mike, in your research, have you found out if this is a cousin, Nick O'Leary's cousin then?
It would have to be his cousin or his brother, if my calculations are right, if it's a grandson of Jack Nicklaus.
Well,
I believe it's
family,
his cousin.
Familial relations are kind of strange, though. It could be a different family, or half a family, or an eighth of a family.
What?
Sure, like if Jack Nicklaus maybe had, I don't know if he had multiple wives.
I don't know this either.
At the same time?
Sure, polygamy. He was big into that. Arnold Palmer was known as the clean-cut guy, and then Nicholas was the polygamist who, you know, went on crime sprees occasionally. You know that. You've heard that story, right, Jonah?
No, I haven't. You should maybe write that.
Yeah, I'll write that story. No, lest anyone think that I was being serious in talking about Jack Nicklaus and his crime spree.
He's been married once, and I thought it said Barbara Bush, but that's impossible. It was Barbara Bash. She's still married to her.
Why would that be impossible?
Barbara Bush?
Yeah.
Being married to her now?
Different.
No,
Barbara
not
Bush.
Now.
Yeah, well, that's what it
said. You just said he's been married once. He could be once
and divorced. Well, it said 1962, present.
I see.
And I was like, yeah, that's Barbara Bush.
So a big day for the Nicklaus family.
Yeah.
I wonder what the Palmers are up to.
Probably drinking iced tea and lemonade mixed together.
I don't know. Jonah, have you noticed this fake laugh that Rodak's been developing? I noticed it at the bar a couple of nights ago. As more deer, I have deer keep prancing right past the studio window here. It's like we're broadcasting from the zoo.
Yeah.
There's just deer just bounding about. I'm impressed. I'm enthralled by this. But anyway, did you notice that? We get together for the game Monday night.
I don't think it's fake, but it's like embellished. It's like, really want to...
It's exaggerated. Laughing at your really corny jokes, so let me give you a corny laugh.
I feel like that. I thought you just thought it was funny.
Well,
I don't know. I don't know. I've known Mike Rodak for a few years. And
a long time, actually.
It really stuck out to me Monday night. I made a point to mention it. I was in one of those deals where I was in a different orbit. I got there a little later.
Yeah, you were off your game. You were off your game.
You were kind of a buzzkill.
Yeah, you were.
I think so. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Like, that is a thing that you need to be concerned with when you're joining up with friends, how in the bag they are by the time you arrive, because it could totally throw off your night and their night.
Yeah. What, you weren't drunk enough?
Well, no, I was stone sober.
Oh.
Whoa, I think we were.
That's a bad
We weren't
mix.
In the bag by any means, but.
You were ahead of me. You were in a different orbit, as I like to say.
We had been there a while, though. We were.
I think you were just grumpy.
Loosed up.
I was.
You came across grumpy.
I was grumpy because you had this fake laugh that was.
No, this was even
came
before
off
that.
As quite
that
annoying.
Could be annoying.
This
that
was
could
long
be very
before
annoying.
That.
Yeah.
You just
but
came there.
Genuine when they're laughing.
You came there like, oh, I have to watch this basketball game at this place.
So you went in with a poor
what?
Attitude.
What? That's just how I. That's how it came across to me.
It was Elmo's. It's like.
Right, which is why it's
why would I me. Why would I say I have to watch this basketball game at this place? It Where just, else would I watch it?
You didn't seem too interested in
that's
Villanova's
like saying Norm,
20
that's,
point win.
That's Norm Peterson saying, "Oh, I can't believe I'm a Cheers again."
That's why it surprised me. I was a little bit shocked.
I think you're drunk and you're having false memories.
Well, wouldn't be the first time.
And false memories and fake laughter. We'll bring in Ryan Stitt. He's going to come in a little bit, talk some pro wrestling. Ryan Stitt is the head chef at Elmo's. Great wrestling fan. Huge sports fan. I've been trying to get him to come on the show, actually, for over a year. And I like talking sports with him. I think he's always been he would be an asset to the show. I've been trying to get
sure
him to come.
Are you sure this is going
to
work out? Because I've interviewed. Have you interviewed Ryan before? Because I interviewed him one time.
Well, here's the thing. You can't carry it off as an interview. Now, maybe he'll get intimidated by a microphone, as everybody does when you're not used to it. And you think, oh, my gosh, people are going to hear my voice all around Western New York. But it's also, he's going to be out, with the exception of Bobby, and now he's met Bobby, but it's been a long time. Us three, this is Elmo's, right? When Ryan Stitt takes that seat right there, it's going to be 11:30 at Elmo's.
What I'm saying, I interviewed him at Elmo's, and I could not use one of the quotes in the story that I wrote about Elmo's.
Ah.
And Khalil Mack and his relationship
but
with
the
bar. I wrote about that. I interviewed Ryan in the back.
Yeah, it's just going to be a few guys talking sports.
Keep that dump button ready, Bobby.
I know.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we're going to have to talk about that.
That's what I'm talking about.
A lot of F-bombs. Oh, you're talking about
F-bombs.
We got to bet him very well when he gets here then.
Well, we're all like that.
Well, yeah, but.
There's a switch that we have to flip. All of us. All of us in this room.
But he's not trained, so.
Yeah, I think he'll be all right.
All right.
He's a smart guy. He's super. Super smart, and he knows his sports, especially hockey. Maybe we'll have some Jack Eichel talk.
He played hockey. I think he was in All-Western New York or something like that.
Yeah, he was a stud.
League,
he was a stud.
Williamsville North.
And, in fact, Brooks Orpik's father was at Elmo's last week.
Really?
And was watching with some friends of mine, and I had never met Brooks. I've met Brooks Orpik a bunch of times because he was in his prime when I was covering the NHL. I've written all the Brooks Orpik stories. And but I had never met his father. And so he's there, and the Capitals are playing the Rangers on the TV, so he's engrossed in the game, but he's, you know, asking me questions. He remembered me from covering the Sabres and stuff. And just sitting at, and Ryan leans over and introduces himself, and Brooks Orpik's father knew who Ryan Stitt was.
Remembered him as a player?
Yes, absolutely.
That's cool.
That is cool.
That's really cool.
That's got to be cool, you know, to be remembered like that.
Oh, my God, as an athlete, that's...
Not me.
Yeah, me either.
I am.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what you are known for.
Tennis?
Trolling Bills fans.
Tom Brady's...
Pocket pool?
Leg humper. What do you think the Patriots are going to do at quarterback? What do they have these draft picks?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, we didn't bring in... Let's dig into what the Patriots could pull off if they decided to trade Rob Gronkowski. What do you think they could get?
Well, let's start with what they have with their draft picks, because they can get a lot with those draft picks that they have. And to refresh it, they have the Rams pick in the first round, number 23. They have their own pick, number 31. And then they have two second-round picks, including number 43 from the 49ers. Now, if you took just those first three picks, which for the Patriots, again, would be 23, 31, 43, that gives you enough points to get up to number four, which is that second Browns pick, which is that potential trade spot if, let's say, two or three quarterbacks come off the board to start the draft, and you could have a team trying to trade up.
Well,
they have the ammunition to do that.
What do you mean
so
points,
do the Bills.
Too?
Like as far as a
what
draft,
somebody was looking for?
Well, a draft trade chart,
okay.
Of which there are many out there.
Okay.
I'm using the basic one, the outdated one, admittedly, the Jimmy Johnson one. And again, there's several different versions, that's roughly what you could get. And again, there's going to be competition, so it's not saying that would happen. But the Patriots should be considered in the mix to... potentially trade up. And for the reasons I stated before, that it's there's a long-term view at this team. I don't think the Patriots ever really see it as let's load up and,
how much
and just
do you
win
think,
right now.
I know you can't answer this question definitively,
right.
But just as a hypothesis as somebody, and I'm not trying to throw you under the bus as the Patriots guy, but I know you follow it closely, as do I.
Yeah, and
I've been
him.
Around. I've interviewed and met Robert Kraft a bunch of times, and so have
right.
you, and so we're not going to tap into his thinking here, but do you think that there's also an element of the embarrassment of the Garoppolo trade that they need to reload at that position?
Yes.
Or else? Like, as opposed to other years, like maybe a little more pressure that, hey, we just gave away a guy who was really good. We don't know how much longer Tom Brady's going to be able to cut it.
Yeah.
Even though let's say that Tom Brady stays healthy. He's still going to decline at some point physically. He can't play... What are you giving me the for? You
just,
don't
I'm,
come on.
No, I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying it kind of came on quick that everybody counted him out again.
And
you know what I mean?
Well,
it's just kind of like that's all I'm saying.
True.
I'm not
but
saying it's not going to happen.
But people get old. We see it all the
Definitely.
Time.
But that's not
they
even,
get old fast.
Right.
Now, not all the time, but they can get old
Absolutely.
Fast.
And
like
that,
fall apart.
Mm-hmm. That's not the entire story, though.
Right.
He may not play until the wheels fall off.
Yeah.
If you listen to the documentary Tom versus Time, which he had put together, it was done by him, edited, you know, by his people. The very last scene of that, taped after the Super Bowl loss, he starts talking about whether it's worth it,
right,
and whether all the work he puts in and the time away from his family is worth it,
right.
And his wife has been trying to get him. We've learned,
right.
trying to get him to retire since after two Super Bowls ago, right.
Right. So I can see easily a scenario where he's still capable of playing at a high level, but he decides to hang it up.
Yeah.
So I'm not
One more
sure.
Super Bowl, I think.
Right. I'm
I
not
think,
sure the question but. Is how much longer can he play? It's how much longer does he want to play?
Yeah.
And I think in the past we've seen that as, or we've looked at it as he's going to play as long as he can, but there's a lot of doubt that got inserted with that interview. And in fact, Belichick was asked about it at the owners' meetings, and he said, you know, I'd prefer to have those conversations with Tom personally.
Yeah.
So you can sense some sort of angst there. From Belichick,
which is highly unusual,
right?
That he doesn't have all those answers before he sits down in a setting. Like, in fact, I was surprised that Bill Belichick spoke at all at the owners' meetings because he's known for skipping that stuff.
Well, he not only spoke at the breakfast, he also spoke to local reporters before that, which is unusual. So it's an extra step there at his part. And we all know kind of what went down last year. That I think it's pretty clear there was tension between them. Kraft has acknowledged it, and both of them have had knowledge of it to a certain extent. So that could also be a factor that drives it down. But either way, I mean, they've drafted quarterbacks in the past, too. It's not like they haven't drafted quarterbacks while Brady's been what he has been. They've drafted more than the Bills have. I mean, Jacoby Brissett and Ryan Mallett, and they've missed on some of these guys. They hit on Garoppolo, you could say. And
they've averaged like one every other year, pretty much.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah. I mean, some of them have been later rounds, sixth, seventh round guys, but they spent a lot of draft assets on that, and I think that's a lot more likely scenario than them using those to trade for Odell Beckham. But look, there's also you could look at it as they need younger players, they need to restock some of their draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
As Tim mentioned, they only have one pick above 60 in the last 3 years. They only had four draft picks total last year, including two in the third, one in the fourth, one in the sixth. So,
Now, I know we only have a minute before the break here,
right,
but what do you think about the plausibility that the Patriots would actually trade Rob Gronkowski?
I think it's absolutely plausible. If you look at what Belichick has done in the past, he's traded those guys away a year too early rather than a year too late, whether it's been Logan Mankins or Richard Seymour or Chandler Jones or Jamie Collins or Brandon Cooks or whoever.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we were discussing it on the air, I forget, or not, but would another team take Rob Gronkowski knowing that you don't know, you know, if he's going to play or not?
I think there are some teams out there that would think that if we brought him here, we could convince him to keep playing.
Mm-hmm.
And the three teams that I can think of right away are the Los Angeles Chargers and the Los Angeles Rams.
Mm-hmm.
That's two. They could say, hey, look, you can start your movie career right here in the offseason. You could live here year-round, do what you want to do. We'll let you, you know, you're a pro. You don't need to practice as much as everybody else. Or, you know, we'll let you, you know, your off-season, mini-camp, whatever. You know, they'll work with a talent like that. Or the Oakland Raiders, who are going to be the Las Vegas Raiders in a couple of years, and that just seems to be a Gronk place to be. In terms of the Raiders seem to be really interested in making an attitude adjustment type culture change. I'm talking about hiring Gruden and these things that they're doing. They want to come into Vegas with this certain
mentality. Well, they have PSLs
mentality.
They need to sell.
Absolutely.
They have a stadium. The same thing is true with the Rams. But one last thought on that is, if you're the team acquiring him, you'd obviously add some sort of conditional pick there. I think you'd require him to report and play a year or two. So maybe it's a draft pick down the road, second round pick in 2020 that's conditional, let's say, on him playing. But it's a good contract for a team to acquire. I mean, he's on a bargain contract as it is. It would be $9 million for this season and $10 million for next season, all not guaranteed.
Yeah.
Now, he'd probably want a new contract, but you have some leverage there, at least to play with. So I think it's totally plausible.
All right. First hour in the books. Second hour coming up. We're going to get into WrestleMania 34, Sunday night from New Orleans. Ryan Stitt is here. Been trying to get Ryan on the show for a year and a half. And we're going to talk some wrestling. We're going to talk, is John Cena going to face The Undertaker?
Will Gronk show up again?
Will Charlotte Flair end Asuka's 2.5-year winning streak?
Maybe.
Will Daniel Bryan regret coming out of retirement? Will Roman Reigns beat Brock Lesnar? And the biggest question, will I make it through the next hour without mispronouncing one of these names?
You didn't make it through this hour,
no.
So we'll try again.
Who
next
it?
Hour.
What did I miss?
Asuka, but it's Japanese.
Asuka?
So.
Well, what is... Oh, then help me while we're at it here. Shinsuke Nakamura?
Shinsuke.
Shinsuke?
Nakamura.
Why don't they just take the U's out of their name? This is a scandal. Take the U's out of the name and I'd have an easier time.
The silent U. I didn't really realize that until now, but I guess.
Asuka and Shinsuke Nakamura.
Close.
Nakamura.
Let me change my notes here so I don't bludgeon it as much. Oh, the Bludgeon Brothers. They're on this card, too. I just walked into another one.
There you go.
I'm getting excited.
You got that word down.
With Ryan Stitt and Jonah Bronstein, he knows his wrestling, Mike Rodak, and I will probably just flail through this next segment. And Bobby Rosati handling the knobs. On the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Welcome back to the Tim Graham Show, hour number two, here on Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Here with Big Crooked, my co-host, Mike Rodak of ESPN.com. Mike's proud of that because it's just not, it has some gravitas.
Yeah,
it has some,
it.
You know, some weight to it.
And people
the big crooked.
People like to yell it at
he
him.
He can sign his autographs that way now. Mike Rodak, the big crooked. You can charge more for an inscription.
Yeah, that's right.
I've never been asked for an autograph in my life.
Really?
Why?
Yeah. I mean,
because nobody likes me.
It is crazy. Well, I've been asked a couple of times, and I always think it's just
it's weird.
Absurd.
We should have a Mike Rodak autograph table at your Make-A-Wish event.
That's right. That's going to be coming up at Elmo's here. We haven't set a date yet, but in May or June. May want to do it like with the U.S. Open. We may do it on a Sunday. Elmo's usually is closed on a Sunday. Adam Blake, the manager, is offered to open up on a Sunday for the Make-A-Wish event. You know who you'd have to check with, though, on that? Ryan Stitt.
I was going to say God.
Ryan Stitt.
It's the Lord's Day.
That is the Lord's Day. Ryan Stitt is here. And I've been looking forward to having Ryan on. So, Ryan, but let's talk about this real quick. We are going to talk about WrestleMania 34. Well, we got scattershot conversation, I predict, coming up over the next hour. We can talk about the things that we do at Elmo's after hours. Well, it's never really after hours, but when the sports are over, we watch Sports Jeopardy and yell out drunken answers at the screen. There's
Adam stares at the screen.
Yes.
Mike does his little thing every time he gets an answer right. Do it, Mike.
He has this weird, he's spiking the football. But
like I'm dabbing, but not really.
Yeah.
I usually just want to leave at that point.
Yeah, that's
new thing last night, watching Jaws movies. We watched, out of order, by the way, whatever station that was, they're showing Jaws. Ryan, I learned last night, his favorite movie is Jaws. And so they're showing it, but they show Jaws 3, followed by Jaws 2.
So you were there last night?
Yeah.
It's funny, because I thought Monday night you had said that you can't come anymore this week, because you can only come once a week. That's your rule.
No, I absolutely did not say that.
I think you said that.
Ryan, have you ever known this to be any kind of rule of mine?
I don't think that's true.
I have not.
Fake news. Crooked Rodak. Little crooked.
Tim saying something like that facetiously.
I don't know him to do that.
Yeah.
It's about to be 3 days in a row. So anyway, Jaws 3 last night, which I saw in the theater, and watching it, a 3D movie that's not really in 3D is pretty comical. The things that they try to do to make it seem...
It's terrifying, though.
Did you have the glasses?
I learned that... No, that's the point I'm trying to make, Mike.
I'm a little bit slow.
A movie that
some
was
sort
made,
of glasses on.
Yeah, a movie that's made to be in 3D and not, and it was a bad movie on top of it. We got to learn that Simon McCorkendale took one for the team.
That's a smart movie, though.
Smart movie, yes. It is. The premise is SeaWorld is trying to capture a shark and have it live in captivity, which has never been done, a great white shark. And so, of course, they find one. They raise it from a pup. I don't know what a shark baby shark is. We raise it from a...
That's close enough.
Yeah. And of course, it turns on them, as one would expect. Simon McCorkendale took one for the team twice over. So anyway, what I wanted to mention with Ryan Stitt here is he's a huge Sabres guy. Tonight is the last home game, fan appreciation night. They're giving away a Dominic Hasek bobblehead, by the way, which is something the Sabres or the Bills really don't do, giveaways. So this is kind of rare. Anywho, Ryan, what's your synopsis of this Sabres season? Another lost season. I know you've been... A big Jack Eichel fan, Casey Mittelstadt, maybe one last chance to score a goal in front of the home crowd tonight. What are you thinking about your hockey team?
Another season loss, but you know, you gotta cut the fat, and I think there's a lot of fat still to be cut here. So,
which players do you think?
I think Kyle Oposo's. He's not even out there anymore.
Yeah,
he's supposed to be one of the leaders.
Yeah,
he's slow.
Assistant captain, right?
Can't keep up. Yeah, he's one of them. Yeah.
Ryan O'Reilly, what are your thoughts on him?
He needs better players around him to be as good as he can be, I think. I think he had a bad season, but, I mean, he doesn't have any help.
Yeah.
There's so many players on that team that just need to go.
Ristolainen, are you done with him?
No. What's wrong with Ristolainen? Like,
didn't have a very good year.
Neither for a team
that wasn't, well, right, but...
I think he's part of the core group, I mean...
Don't have much else on defense, it's kind of
hard.
Josh
Georges needs to go. I don't think I can stay another season with him on the team. He's a bad one.
I feel like we just keep recycling through some of these guys where it's like, oh, we had Molson and Gionta for a few years. They're like, oh, I just can't take another year of those guys. And now there's like a next group of,
and they're
of
stuck
those
with
players.
These guys.
Right.
They're still paying
Molson.
Molson's
like six more years or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't know how many.
Yeah, that might be a little. It's a lot, though.
Yeah,
a couple more years.
Four or five, maybe.
Kulikov last year. And
I think the Sabres missed Brian Gionta, strangely enough. Yeah. Yeah. He was a throwaway player. And
Molson might have helped him.
Do we know what Molson ended up doing out
probably
west in the AHL?
No idea.
I saw he was doing well, but it's a level where he should be doing well.
Starring in Tim Burton movies, probably.
So he was on loan from the Sabres, but they allowed him to play for the Ontario team out there in California?
Right.
But is he still a member of the Sabres, though?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Yeah, he needs to be, he wasn't traded or anything, so he still belongs to the Sabres.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anyways. So we got big WrestleMania 34 coming up, Sunday, 7 o'clock. I'm not into promoting the whole thing. I don't know what the pay-per-view cost is, but I know it's 5 hours of wrestling matches.
Can actually get it for free.
And 2 hours ahead of time. What, if you join the
WWE
channel?
And you're not, and you're a new subscriber.
Oh, okay. You get it for free. How much does it cost normally?
$10.
A month.
No, how much does, if I just want to watch WrestleMania...
I don't know. You really, most, 60? You can still do that, but nobody does that anymore.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Like, the pay-per-view numbers have almost evaporated.
That's great value.
So now it's streaming numbers?
Yeah, that's all they want is network subscribers.
That's interesting. Because
if you subscribe for a whole year, they make two to three times more money than if you just bought WrestleMania.
Right.
Right. I feel like pay-per-view is sort of a dated concept. It's based on cable, and cable is going
away. Yeah, but I mean, it still worked big for UFC and boxing. The
Conor McGregor.
Mayweather fight.
You know what? There's something I need to say. Let's go back to hockey real quick. And it actually provides us with a sequitur to get back into wrestling. But Matt Molson, 42 points in 43 games, 15
Ooh,
goals,
really?
27 assists.
Bring
he's
him back.
He's a plus 17 for the Ontario Reign. And I think that is the younger brother of Roman Reigns, who's fighting Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. As everyone knows, Lesnar beat Goldberg for the title.
That's right.
And Reigns last beat The Undertaker to finish off his career, maybe.
Yeah, possibly.
Maybe, at WrestleMania 33. So is that the big match? Or are we anticipating Cena and Undertaker actually going at it?
I don't think Cena and Undertaker is even going to be a match. I think it might just be a segment.
Yeah,
I can
where
see
Undertaker shows up and we hear the gong and the whole thing.
Yeah. I think no gong. I think he rides up on a motorcycle.
Oh,
the American Badass one.
Yeah,
to set up a later match.
He rides through the parking lot, you know, up the ramp, down the ramp to the ring, and like grabs him out of the crowd. And they get in the fight, and it's like a 10-minute segment.
That'd be cool.
All right, so help me out with this. I know Undertaker is like the doo doo. See, this is where I'm hanging out with Ryan. I was like, we don't have a couple of beers in front of us. But what's the difference between the Undertaker and the gong and the guy who sits upright, you know, and does the cool thing versus the Undertaker on the motorcycle? Is it a different character?
Yeah, it's a different gimmick. I think when he went to it, it was probably like 14 or 15 years of doing the same thing. I mean, he changed a little bit, but at that point, I think more characters were like based off real life people. I think they're trying to, you know, get wrestlers to just amp themselves up more, because it seemed like every single wrestler looked the same, or it was just like their gimmick was just like a tough guy with tattoos for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was probably part of it.
Well, it was from...
They got to play Kid Rock music the entire time, too.
You think that's good?
No.
Well, that's why a lot of people think he's coming back, is that because they're putting Kid Rock in the Wrestling Hall of Fame.
There you go.
WWE Hall of Fame. And he did the song, the American Badass song. But a lot of people...
Is that what's playing right now?
Yep.
Ryan, wouldn't you say a lot of people grew to hate that Biker Undertaker character, and when he came back to the original... Dead man, you know, was very.
How about Jonah?
Kind of revived his career.
Jonah's carrying the show.
Yeah, I thought
here.
It was like a cute change or whatever. But when he went back, I mean, that's him.
There's times when I stop and think, like, where does Jonah have all the time to, like, he knows every single high school basketball player, every single college basketball player, knows wrestling.
He's
probably knows like,
right after this every day.
He can talk football without any problem.
Probably knows about
he talks
cricket
the NBA
and like Madagascar.
What's your weak spot, Jonah? Baseball? We can't talk
baseball. Even though I do like and appreciate the sport and I watch the World Series, I don't follow regular season baseball. Other than covering the Sabres, I don't really pay much attention to
the
NHL.
You have a working knowledge of hockey.
Yeah, what I need to know, but I don't watch much of the rest of the NHL.
Well, you didn't know about Matt Molson. That's the thing.
I didn't know he was doing well. I didn't know his numbers.
See? Working knowledge.
So do you? I know more about the Olympics than Mike Rodak, I'll tell you that.
Well, that's a pretty low standard. Do you just sit at home and just, like, research things, or?
You know, I read about wrestling a lot more than I watch it. That's kind of why I know a lot about wrestling from
This is John Cena,
websites.
Right?
Yep. And I don't know, Twitter,
See,
you follow the right things on Twitter, you get
I have some awareness.
The information you need.
I was big into wrestling, like, in the 90s.
Who was your favorite?
I was saying, Owen Hart, when he died. I remember that day vividly.
You liked him when he died?
Come that on. Was...
That's, no, kinda, I remember, that's pretty cool.
I remember being in a school bus, coming home, and learning about that from my neighbor, Jake, I think his name was.
See, with me, it was where I know where I was when Magic Johnson announced he had AIDS. Mike Rodak remembers where he was when the pro wrestler died.
Yeah.
I was watching that pay-per-view. It was crazy.
No kidding. So yep. Did he die live, or was there a delay? Did they go dark? What happened?
He was they're doing a video promo for the match, and he was supposed to come down from the ceiling. He was a blue blazer. He switched his gimmick, and I guess they're using the same type of like setup that they use for Sting in WCW. Would he come down really quick, and he'd be able to like rip it off, you know, really fast, and you know, just get right after him. And I guess it just it didn't work.
He fell out of it.
70 feet, yeah, right on the turnbuckle and the ropes. Craziness.
And you saw it
head first, right?
No, you don't see it.
Oh, okay.
You can't find video of it.
But if you were watching, I'm sure that they could find a way to scrub that video because they don't want it out there. But as you're watching the pay-per-view live, did you see it?
Nope.
Because it's happening off camera, right?
Yep. It's they just came back. It was I think it was Jim Ross and probably Jerry the King. And they just kind of told them what happened and seemed really sad. And then they just continued the pay-per-view, which was kind of weird. But I guess the show goes on.
Can I have a brush or a connection with pro wrestling fame, which I just learned within the last couple of months. So where my grandmother lived in small town Indiana, just across the Ohio River from Louisville, there's this motel, a Days Inn, in which, and there's a KFC right there in which they actually knew my grandmother, who lived an eighth of a mile up the road. And this Days Inn is where Jerry the King Lawler used to take his groupies and
ring rats, they're called
ring rats, right? That's they right. And a couple of them happened to be like 14 or so, and he ended up getting investigated for rape. But that's with this Days Inn where I've stayed. It's like a 20 or 30, I don't know, I'd have to think, but it's small. It's like a 20 or 30 unit motel. It's not even a hotel, it's a motel.
Holiday Inn.
And I've stayed at a hotel where Jerry Lawler may have committed rapes. How about that? Child rapes.
I'm not laughing. I'm laughing at my own joke.
That's my brush to fame.
Between what you accused Jack Nicklaus of doing earlier in the show.
What'd you say about Jack
Nicklaus?
And
now Jerry Lawler.
I don't even remember. It's about how Arnold Palmer was the beloved one. In that rivalry, everybody thought Arnold Palmer was this, you know, nice, you know, the adorable whatever, and Jack Nicklaus was the... You know, the
heel.
The heel, yeah. Arnold Palmer was the baby face, and Jack Nicklaus was the heel, and then I just invented some thing, heelish things that Jack Nicklaus did, like robbing banks and things, going on crime sprees. All right,
not
we need to take
gloves.
A break. That segment went by pretty quick, huh, Ryan?
Not bad, yeah.
See, that was one down, two to go.
Did you get through all your notes,
Ryan? Too
good.
What's that?
You still got more notes for us when we come back?
We have a lot of matches. We have a lot of matches to get into. A lot of matches.
14 matches. 14 or 15 matches.
I don't know if we're going to be able to break down all of them. But I want to find out about Charlotte Flair. A lot of people don't know this, and I want to brag on it, but I've actually gotten into a little bit of a Twitter relationship with Ric Flair, and I'm pretty happy about it.
Cool.
How about that? Of all things... Of all things.
Jealousy.
But then he wouldn't come on the air last week.
So you're a ring rat now.
I'm a ring rat, yes. I'll go to Days Inn with Jerry the King Lawler or Lex Luger or Ric Flair, whatever.
I'll be a ring rat for the Nate.
The Nate.
The Nate.
Nature boy, Ric Flair, Nate. That's what, when I received his cell number from another wrestler, and that was the name on it was Nate.
It's a hockey nickname.
N-A-T-C-H, which is actually Natch, but anyway. Bobby, I know you've been wanting me to get out of this segment, so I will. More pro wrestling and other assorted nonsense on the Tim Graham Show. Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Welcome back to the Tim Graham Show. Appropriately enough, we heard about Jonah Bronstein talking about gooses, we have a lot of deers running past. I'm going to see if we can get one of them on the show.
I'll admit that earlier in the show, during a break, I did ask Tim whether it is deer or deers.
It's all right.
And
mooses. There's another deers.
Meese.
More deers.
One of the several.
Look at this.
One of the several deers.
Jonah, you got to capture some of this wildlife. You know, nature's crazy, man.
See,
are they right outside
that.
The window right now still?
About a frame, plus the light.
Eh, well. Ryan, should we turn down the lights in here to give it a little bit more of a bar feel? Because it seems like that's about the only difference is the fact that we're not drinking and the lights are kind of up.
You want to dim them? Dim them. I can do it.
Bar talk. But we're on, we're on camera.
I like
nah,
this.
Yeah, it might screw with Jonah's...
with Jonah's
lighting.
Everybody listening on the radio can really tell when we did.
Ryan Stitt is in studio. Elmo's head chef.
Extraordinaire.
The master of the wing. By the way, and I've said it a bunch of times, and it's not just because it's my neighborhood joint. Elmo's are the most underrated wings in Western New York. Although that's changing. They're becoming, in fact, I'm trying to think what the name of that place was. It's closed down. It was on... there was a place that advertised heavily on the other sports station, on WGR. I can't remember. But anyway, I happened to be in the area, and I stopped in for lunch. And I asked them how good their wings were. You know, like, hey, moment of, you know, guy to guy here. I'm not going to order the wings if I'm wasting my time. And he said, they're pretty good. He says, they're not Elmo's level good, but they're pretty good.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, whoa, that's awesome. That's the first one. But Ryan, I told you that story. Do you remember the name of that place?
No idea what you're talking about.
Oh, jeez.
I'll look
where
it
was.
I can't place it.
It's closed down. It was over by All High Stadium. That there's a place.
What street was that?
What's the name of that one that goes by? Is that Main Street?
Main Street, Bennett High School.
Yeah,
I can't
Bennett,
think any wing
over
there.
Bennett High School. It went out of business.
Oh.
It's since reopened as something else.
Hmm.
Papa Jake's or something, or
Papa Jake's is on
no,
Elmwood.
No, not
yeah.
Jake. Something. This
that's
was
closed too. That's
yeah, it's something else.
It's anyway. A good place now.
It was on Main Street,
I think. Anyhow, Elmo's is getting the credit, and this is the guy who makes the wings, Ryan Stitt,
mm-hmm.
And this is the guy who knows his pro wrestling.
Guy behind the guy.
That's right. Let's talk about a couple of these quirky matches. The Ronda Rousey debut. A lot of people are talking about that, but people who know wrestling aren't expecting much. What are your thoughts on... I'll set it up here. It's Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle, so an established star with Ronda Rousey to carry her, versus Triple H and Stephanie McMahon. Do we care much?
Yeah, you have to care. It's Ronda Rousey, right?
No, don't have to.
Well, you should. I mean, it's a big name. Not impressed by her so far. Can't talk in the microphone. She seems to be missing cues. She got punched in the face the other day, and like she barely even moved. It took like a second to Jeez. React to it. It just looked awful.
She's been getting blasted on a couple interviews she's doing for being a
she's done terrible
for being a crank
on the media tour.
Yeah,
the ESPN interview was like, or it was Mike and Mike or something like that, wasn't it?
Because people are still asking her about MMA because that's what made her who she is, and she doesn't want to talk about that anymore.
Talk about her losses.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
So what do you expect?
Sloppy match, honestly. Rousey's first match. Stephanie is not a wrestler. You know, she's been in the business forever, but she's not a wrestler. And even like Kurt Angle, I think that when he teamed with The Shield, I think it was Extreme Rules, he looked like kind of an old man with a bad back. You know, he had to get carried off in a stretcher, and I think that was just done to give him like a 15-minute rest. He can come back and finish strong.
Triple H is also old, right?
I think he's like 50, something like that.
Yeah.
But he's in good shape, man. He's going to have to be the one that carries this entire thing because I don't see Stephanie or Ronda doing it.
I think Kurt Angle will bring it.
Yeah, he's 48.
He's going to bring it.
You know,
but
he won
I mean,
a gold medal with a broken neck.
Yeah, but he was like 25.
Yeah, now he's got that broken neck.
That was 30 years ago.
He's got multiple broken necks.
Yeah. Kurt Angle is one of the all-time greats.
Yeah. I agree.
I think he'll bring it. This will be his last WrestleMania match, probably.
He's always bothered me, though, for some reason. I don't know why.
And Stephanie's not a wrestler, but she can... she can act. Not necessarily as an actress, but in the wrestling context. She'll do her part. I read they've been rehearsing this match a lot, which isn't uncommon, but isn't really common. They don't all do that.
And can't I that think be dangerous be to rehearse it too much?
I was about to say that because you just want to be on cue, and if you miss that, everything goes, you know, goes off.
But with a newcomer like her and people that haven't been wrestling a lot lately, that's going to help them. And you know, The Undertaker, for the most part, over the years, rehearsed his matches heavily. That's why they were so dramatic. They knew where they were going before the match started.
I think The Undertaker is probably on another level than anybody else. I mean, what's it going to look like when Stephanie and Ronda are wrestling each other? I mean,
sloppy,
first
you're right.
Match, I mean, yeah. It's...
And Ronda could hurt her.
Smooth. Yeah, by accident. I mean,
you know,
sure.
Part of the skill of wrestling, ironically, is to wrestle without hurting the person you're wrestling.
Yep.
And if you're not very good at it, you know, that something bad could happen.
So maybe that's the storyline, isn't necessarily how the match or who wins or the plot line. It's actually seeing the skill level that Ronda Rousey has or does not have.
Yeah, and if she could just not look awkward.
Yeah, that's really all she has to do, I think. I mean, no glaring mistakes. I don't know. We'll see.
And so you got a bit of a gimmick match there. But here's one that is unusual because of the reality of it. And I'm talking about Daniel Bryan. He's going to be wrestling for the first time since 2015. He actually retired in 2016. Because he was having post-concussion seizures. Now, he's been cleared. He's gone through a bunch of, you know, different medical diagnoses that have allowed him to go into this match. But at 36 years old, and these issues very real, the types of things that we're talking about with football players, with hockey players, this is the real side of wrestling that even though people say, oh, it's fake, well, sure. But this is still a demanding sport in which you could get seriously screwed up. And here's a guy that a lot of people are wondering should even be in the ring. I know we're not doctors in here, but from what do we think about this guy at 36? I think if he were a football player or a hockey player, we would be saying retire.
Yeah,
or the league would be saying we're not going to let you. We're not going to let
you
do this
did.
Anymore. But
that's what they did for almost 3 years.
Right. Oh, so
he was insistent about coming back. His contract is set to expire in the summer, and he'd be going and wrestling somewhere else probably. And he went out and sought after all these different specialists, and finally the WWE relented and said, all right, well, they said he's been tested more than any wrestler ever in terms of brain and neurology and things like that.
The WWE wrestlers wouldn't let him. Right, I think everybody else was clearing him, and he was cleared by their own doctors.
But is there, I think, related to the concussion lawsuit?
But is there a ghoulishness here of we're watching? I mean, not that we want to see him get hurt, but our curiosity of whether, you know, we're going to be every move we're going to be thinking, oh my god, like should they be doing this? Could this go wrong? How's he going? Or even if he leaves the ring on his feet and jumping up and down and doing cartwheels back to the dressing room. How he's going to feel in a week, in 6 months, you know, that type of thing.
It adds to the suspense. Every bump he takes, you're like, ooh, did he hit his head on that?
Is that real, too?
That's how it is with The Undertaker now, I think. You're just, like, waiting for him to collapse in the ring. I mean, it almost happened 3 years ago, and he's even older now, so.
How old is Undertaker?
He's like
53.
Yeah.
53. You know, Shane McMahon's 48 years old.
Yeah, so
he had concussions.
Yeah, let me set it up. I guess I'll give the match, and then we'll talk about it. It's a tag team match. It's Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn.
Yep.
Did I say it right?
You got it.
Okay, Sami Zayn. And again, the post-concussion seizures, first match since 2015 for Daniel Bryan. So is this a thing where maybe they let him ease his way in, that he's not in the ring a lot, that it's McMahon, you know, going and taking... I don't know what. Are we going to be able to tell by the moves that they're allowing him to do whether or not he's the full playbook, for lack of a better metaphor, that he has the full playbook at his disposal?
I think he's going to be an all-in. And he looked pretty good on SmackDown for that short segment. And he got powerbombed on the apron, too. I mean, that's a heavy bump. And he seemed fine.
All right.
He didn't come back to... not do this 100%.
He's not that.
It might not prove to be the wisest decision in the end if he sustains another concussion, but he's coming back to reclaim these lost 3 years of not necessarily winning or losing, but the performances and the moments that he didn't get to experience. And this is in New Orleans, where 4 years ago he won the main event and was kind of the pinnacle of his career.
It's a great Mania, that one.
What time does Sean McDermott step in the ring?
You know,
I don't know, but
I actually reached it because I knew we were going to have that. We were going to be doing a lot of wrestling. I actually did reach out to the Bills this week to say, because I've never had a discussion. I said, "Is Sean McDermott into pro wrestling at all?" And he's not. But if he were, then my next question was going to be, "Can he come on the show and talk pro wrestling?" Which would have been a hoot. Right?
I imagine a lot of the players.
Oh, sure.
Did you know that Sean McDermott wrestled in high school?
That's another one.
That, yeah.
We missed that on the last time we went through the whole list. Yeah. What started that off?
Jack,
Nick O'Leary doesn't wear gloves.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's ever crossed paths with Kurt Angle, because they're about the same age and both grew up in Pennsylvania.
Well, you know what? I'm going to check that out. In fact, Kurt Angle, I'm pretty sure, worked out at the same gym as Sean McDermott. There's a gym, and I interviewed the guy who ran the gym for my... all right, we're going to take a break here, right? We can do that?
Story ideas are flowing.
Let's take a break, and I'm going to look that up. I think they did. I think they worked out at the same
Angle's
gym.
Angle's 5 years older, but...
I think they did. All right, we'll get into this.
Team Foxcatcher.
Well, there's that, too.
Crazy.
There's that, the Foxcatcher, but then there's also a gym where guys went to lift weights, and I want to say that they're Angle brothers, right? And there are two of them?
That
were big time.
I don't know.
Anyways,
I don't know
either. I'm just talking off the top of my head. More awesome. WrestleMania 34 talk with Ryan Stitt and, of course, the Big Crooked and Jonah Bronstein and Bob Rosati on the Tim Graham Show. After this, one last segment, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Last segment of the Tim Graham Show on Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Ryan Stitt from Elmo's here in studio with us. And
talking wrestling.
Talking wrestling with a little bit of hockey. Ryan's the head chef at Elmo's, and he's heading right to Elmo's from here, right?
Yep. Thank you for saying chef, too, by the way. That makes me feel pretty awesome.
What else do they call you?
You know, the guy in the back, I don't know.
Yeah.
The head cook, the guy who's been there the longest.
Yeah, right.
Well, I think there's a chef element to it, because you actually create things.
I do.
And there have been times when I'm there, and I'll ask, I was like, hey, is Ryan back there? And, you know, Lisa will say, yeah, he is an outside, like, have him make me, you know, something, because he's an artisan.
Mm-hmm.
He makes great stuff.
Yeah, that ain't easy.
And the different sauces and the double dip with the wings.
And sauce.
Hey, how about this? Here's a discussion. Like, you can have any kind of sauce on a wing and nobody will blink, right? Anything. Double dip it, char grill it, teriyaki, whatever. But then Western New Yorkers say, but how dare you dip it into anything other than blue cheese? Now, my thought is, if you're going to have a wing... You can get anything you want on it. You should be able to dip it into anything, right? Why is it sacrilegious to use ranch?
Because we're snobs.
It's the ridiculous kind of us against the world.
Yes.
Yes.
Type mindset about a lot of things.
It's like when Frank's Red Hut a couple weeks ago tweeted, you know, buffalo wings and ranch go so well together. And everybody jumped on them
like, you know.
They put out a new tweet and.
Or the New Yorker with its garbage plate reference.
Right.
Like, and Rochester got pissy. How dare you say that our... First off, your garbage plate is garbage.
Yeah, why would you want to be known for that?
Right. How dare you? That's what we're known for. I'm like, oh, fuck. So Genesee beer, one of the worst beers on the market, and a garbage plate. All right, go ahead and have that. You can have it. We don't need it. We're not trying to usurp your culinary excellence.
It's like a pride factor, but it... It goes overboard sometimes.
Sure.
So, but where do you stand,
wings,
Ryan? Where do you stand on ranch and wings?
I don't know. Ranch will do in a pinch, you know, but, you know, you got to go blue cheese.
When you make a wing, are you, when you're trying to come up with, you know, the different combos and the flavors, do you assume that it's going to be dipped into blue cheese? Or, as a chef with the mindedness, do you think that, how I want you to eat this wing with nothing else because I made it just so.
Well, I dip every single bite in blue cheese. So
I do too.
If you want to put in blue cheese, go ahead.
That would be hypocritical.
That's how I think it's better. But yeah, ranch, not the same.
Do you make your own blue cheese?
No.
Does it just come in a jar?
I should say yes, but no. Yeah, it just comes in a jar.
You mix the mayonnaise and whatever else goes in there.
Are you allowed to say what brand
it is?
That's
what we do with the ranch. We went to that with blue cheese though.
Okay.
Oh, so the ranch at Elmo's is fresher than the blue cheese?
It's not fresher. It's just, you know, it's
gourmet.
I might have to try that.
It's a ranch packet, guys.
I think you should do a ranch flavored wing, not necessarily ranch dressing, but ranch seasoning.
I guess they do reverse wings. They shake it in blue cheese and they give you hot sauce.
That sounds actually good.
People have done that? There's such a thing?
I think I've heard people have done that.
A reverse wing.
Mm-hmm.
Listen up. What about up, everybody?
I don't know how I feel about it, but, you know.
Do you make Sicilian wings? I've never had one at Elmo's.
What's in a Sicilian wing?
There's like a Parmesan on it.
Garlic Parm, yeah.
Okay.
I'll make it for you tonight.
There you go.
Perfect.
I'll have it.
I owe Mike Rodak two orders of wings.
He does.
I am on a terrible losing streak when it comes to friendly bets.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't won a friendly bet in forever. I had... Oh, I can't... I was about to say what lost... I can't say it.
Well, yeah, we can't say that one, but we can say the other one was...
I said that John Kelly, the chief of staff of the White House, would get fired before somebody else got fired.
Right.
And this somebody else got fired.
Yep.
Doug Whaley?
No, not Doug Whaley. This was recent. And then late in the game on Monday night, I took Michigan in 15 points. And
they won. They lost by 17.
Yeah, so double or nothing on that.
But
so
I think you won at World of Beer. That Steelers-Ravens game, I think you won that bet.
Mm-mm. You beat me on that one, too.
Well, typical Rodak.
Classic.
All I do is win.
The big crooked.
Yeah.
So, Ryan Stitt, WrestleMania 34 is Sunday, as you know. 7 o'clock, 5 hours of grappling. And the big match that we know of, now everybody's hinting that maybe John Cena versus The Undertaker or whatever. But we know, on the schedule, Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar. What's your prediction on that guy?
That's got to be Roman Reigns, right? I mean, Brock's going to UFC. You would think. I mean, that's what Heyman said.
But that's what they want us all to think right now.
Right, but his contract also expires at the end of Mania. So, I mean, part-time guy, I just don't see him beating Reigns. I mean, that's Vince's guy. This is fourth WrestleMania that he's headlining.
What is it about Roman Reigns that makes him the headliner in today's WWE?
Well, he's pushed, and that's why I think everybody hates him. I mean, I think a lot of fans around my age want to see, you know, a guy, you know, kind of go up slowly or whatever. But Reigns went right out of the Shield and got pushed right into the main event, and he was kind of shoved down people's throats. And it was the same thing happened years before with Cena, where Vince just gets a guy and just...
Lex Luger.
He just beats the world, you know?
Western New York owns, Western New York's own Lex Luger was the same way.
A lot of parallels. Hogan. Yeah.
Luger. But yeah, I don't see Lesnar winning that. I just think that, I think he's going to UFC. For sure.
When is Conor McGregor coming to WWE?
He could appear this Sunday. I don't think he would wrestle, but I wouldn't be surprised if he showed up in the crowd or...
That's an actual thing?
I think that's a thing for any WrestleMania going forward. He wants to do business with them. They would love to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wonder if they were going to get him, though, if they would try to promote it. But Ronda Rousey showed up at WrestleMania 3 years ago, and that wasn't promoted. That kind of started what's going on now.
What do we think of Rob Gronkowski? Does he have a future as a wrestler? I mean, whether or not would he? If he chose to get into it, you can't just assume that because he's an athlete, he'd be good at it. And that's what we were talking about Ronda Rousey in the last segment.
I think he'd be good at it. He seems like a guy who just wants to have, like, you know, and he would have fun with it at least.
And he's really good on the mic too.
Yeah, he can have the I'm like a dummy gimmick, and still just destroy everybody.
Mm. Right, just the party. Like I'm the party guy.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah,
he's going to stick his tongue out a lot.
I think he has the raw ability and the charisma, and they'll probably use him in special attractions. But I do not think he has any interest in being a full time wrestler, beating up his body 300 days a week like he would have to do and. I don't see that happening.
300 days a week.
But guys used to do that. Ernie Ladd, I'm forgetting who some of the other ones. But a lot of football players from the 70s, when they'd retire, they'd go into professional wrestling. It was a way to keep making money and keep being famous, especially if you're big. But I don't see Rob Gronkowski following that. Ron Simmons, exactly.
Yep.
Yeah,
Bill Goldberg. Goldberg was an NFL player.
Probably most popular.
Muhammad Ali used to have crossover matches all the time for the money.
Didn't he fight Gorilla Monsoon?
I think so, and he also fought Lyle Alzado.
Yep.
There was another weird made-for-TV event that was supposed to be an exhibition, and Lyle Alzado decided he was going to try to take it to him after gaining some confidence over a couple of rounds, and then he realized exactly how much Ali was carrying him.
Right.
Ali tattooed him a few times, and that was the end of that.
The Ali match with Gorilla Monsoon, I believe, or it might have been another one they had with a Japanese wrestler, is credited with being the first mixed martial arts match. It was two different fighters and different disciples, even though I think
disciplines.
It was work disciplines. Keith, Goose.
It's just, it's just past Easter. Give them a break.
I was going to say.
Yeah, all these disciples.
We're still in Easter season.
All right, Ryan, what else we got? What are your, how about, you want to give some predictions on the other ones?
Yeah, we got, I think, well, here we go. What if this happens? What if Daniel Bryan turns heel? Oh. That's the way of Vince sticking it to the WWE universe.
Yes.
Because, you know, he loves to do that kind of stuff. And that would make so many people so upset.
How would he? How would you do it in that match?
Just have him turn on Shane and have him just, you know, align with his indie guys, you know, because he's known him for, you know, 15 years, you know, going up in the independent circuits. I think that would be the swerve, you know, of a lifetime, really. It would be crazy.
Especially, and it would be great, because everybody wants to, there has to be adulation. Everybody's excited. Daniel, Daniel Bryan's back. Oh, look at him. We have
such
so many.
Cute story.
Oh,
yep. He's
and then, hey,
cried when he retired, you know, all that stuff.
That would be good.
I would say those things don't happen at WrestleMania.
Nope.
WrestleMania is usually a babyface triumphing. It's kind of like a season finale type show.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And something like that could happen maybe a month or two from now, but I would be shocked.
But that would be
which
crazy.
Might be the reason why they do it.
Yeah.
Because there's always going to be surprises, which is why I'm not so sure the Reigns-Lesnar match is going to go the way you and I think it is, just because they've set it up so, they've telegraphed that for weeks and weeks and weeks. And usually when
that's
they
true.
Do that, something different happens.
What about...
Years ago when,
No, you're the expert here.
When
I'm stepping on you.
Lesnar had Reigns the first time, you know, no one saw Seth Rollins coming out of nowhere.
Right.
I mean, so yeah.
What do we think of AJ Styles and Nakamura for the WWE Championship?
Probably best match of the night as far as, you know, pure wrestling fans. I think probably be 25, 30 minutes long.
Wow. Because you got two younger guys in their prime.
Well, they're not younger, but they've...
Well, they're not younger, but I guess what I'm talking about, there are so many guys
rookies,
in
you know?
The business who are surprisingly old.
That's
you know,
true.
Goldberg was last year, right? Triple H is up there.
Cena's getting up there.
Shane McMahon's up there. Even Daniel Bryan's 36 and with the issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Angle and, you know,
where's Mick
the Undertaker we've been talking about.
I hope he doesn't die in the ring.
Oh, here's one I want to talk about, because there's some weirdness. What's the storyline with Braun Strowman?
He's fighting for the tag team titles with no partner.
Right. So do you think a partner shows up? What do we think? Do you have a prediction on this one, Ryan?
They keep saying that he has to. Like Michael Cole, like you have to have a partner. You have to have a partner. But, I mean, I can see a couple people coming back. Not quite sure how Samoa... What's Samoa Joe's deal? Is he cleared?
That's a good one. Yeah, I've heard he is cleared.
That would be a good partner.
Yeah. Red.
Big Cass.
That's another good one.
He's been out for a year.
Bray Wyatt.
That would be a little stale, I feel like.
I hope he goes in there and does it by himself.
I don't want him to do that, because I think that the Bar is they're a really good tag team. They're just going to
it fits his gimmick as the monster among men.
That's why I think they would put him out there alone.
And that's a great opportunity for WrestleMania 30. That's a slot. That's like the big mystery slot, right? That's where you could have a big reveal, whoever it is going to be. You want it just to be somebody fun, right?
Or it could be his brother, Brains. You know? Did you see that?
I did not.
He was supposed to unveil his partner on Monday Night Raw, and he basically went back in the back and then put a nice shirt on and then called himself Brains because, you know, he's Braun, and his brother's name is Brains.
I see.
Yeah. Hilarious, right? Yeah.
It could be his father, Rick, nicknamed the Crusher, who is the Babe Ruth of slow pitch softball.
Oh. Is that a fact?
Yeah. He is the USSSA all-time World Series leader in home runs.
Good for him.
101. 101 home runs just in the World Series.
Wow, that's impressive.
Is it?
I think it is.
Nobody has more. In the slow pitch
softball. A lot of people play.
But you know how that is. You're not allowed to hit home runs on every at bat. You have a limited number, so you only get the guys who are efficient with
it.
Are definitely going to whack it up. Yeah, that's a rule.
In some leagues, not all leagues.
But in these,
were we talking about that on the air recently? We were talking about that.
We talked about it at the bar.
I don't think we talked about it here.
I've been in leagues where you only are allowed 3 home runs per game.
No, we've never said that.
And when I was living out in Vegas, and we were playing year-round out there, and some really good...
What happens?
It's an out. If you hit one, it's like a fly ball out. And you'd have guys on the other teams that they would purposely make the out because it was an ego thing. Like, here's my out.
I can't help it.
And just crush it. Exactly.
Nice.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Charlotte Flair versus Asuka, who is Asuka or Charlotte
Asuka.
Flair? Asuka?
Asuka.
Asuka?
Asuka.
Asuka.
Everything is silent.
All right, so how about Charlotte Flair versus
Asuka?
Is on a 2.5-year winning streak. Oh, I thought everything was silent. I was just saying her name silently. 2.5-year winning streak for... Can Charlotte Flair beat her?
She could, but I don't think she will.
What is it so... What's so great about Asuka?
I don't know, really, to be
honest.
Like,
that the WWE has been making sure she doesn't lose for 2.5 years.
They seem to make her out to be like this unbeatable, like... You know, terrifying, you know, Japanese mixed martial arts, like, you know, she'll kick your head off type girl. But when she's in the ring, I think she's kind of boring. I mean, that's just me, but she does the same, like, four things. She, like, her strikes don't look convincing, really, I don't think. They seem like they're just kind of touching. I don't know. That's just me.
I think she's a former mixed martial artist, right?
Is she? Yeah, she might be.
She was a big star in Japan before they brought her over.
She used
I
to
think
do
they're setting up.
Too. Did you ever see her? Like she wear a like, different. She had like a chain, like a Jason mask on with like a chainsaw. The one time, like,
I haven't seen that.
Like a crazy clown. Like she would put all types of different makeup on.
Hey,
I think
about,
they're setting up her to be undefeated to face Ronda Rousey, possibly also undefeated a year
that's
or so from
right.
now.
That's
how about right. that form of Japanese wrestling where it's kind of half real,
strong style?
Yep.
What did they call
that's,
it?
That's
strong
where the guy. That's where Shinsuke Nakamura comes from.
Oh,
he's
okay.
the king of strong style.
Oh, that's him. That's that guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's
oh.
why people are so excited for this match, because these two have wrestled 2 or 3 years ago. Our friend Mark Ludwizak would be the best one to tell us about the Japanese
Tokyo
Wrestle
Dome.
Kingdom. And it was, you know, the match of the year in 2016 or 15, whatever that was. And now this is their first rematch from that.
Oh,
and
I see.
Styles won that match, by the way, so I think might go the other way, even it up.
But we don't know
they
if
they have a grudge match.
Vince
SummerSlam.
McMahon and WWE is going to let them have a Japanese strong style half an hour long epic match at WrestleMania. Hopefully
can you do
does.
That in the
they
United
should.
States? Because there has to be some sanctioning issues involved like you would have with boxing or mixed
yeah.
martial arts because there are actual blows that land.
There's actually stiff rules, or stiff might not be the word, strict rules about what you can do in the state of Louisiana in a wrestling match that WrestleMania, when they have their show there, gets exemptions for. So they can pretty much do what they want
wow.
because it's such a big money maker for the city.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. What other predictions do you have, Ryan? We have a couple minutes left.
What else we got? Tag team. No, we got the IC triple threat match. Balor, Rollins, The Miz. I think I heard or saw that Rollins is already being advertised as the champion because they're doing a European tour, so Kant might be out of the bag.
Uh-oh.
They do that all the time. I don't understand.
They're advertising that triple threat match for a Raw in Buffalo in July.
Oh,
they
Raw?
Do that a lot.
Are
yeah,
we
yeah.
Raw?
July something.
When
yep.
they say that? At the house show?
When they had the house show, I think they announced it, yeah.
That's amazing.
See? There you hear it.
Here's something
the
they're not promoting, but I think it's going to happen. A lot of people see this coming. The Rock's going to make an appearance while Elias is doing one of his sing-song events, and The Rock's going to bring his guitar out, and somebody's going to get hit in the head with a guitar probably. Jeff Jarrett might come out and participate in that.
They can't hit him in the head anymore, though. They got him in the back.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
I don't know if that works.
Lindsay D'Arcangelo wanted me to work into this segment that Junkyard Dog is her all-time favorite wrestler.
I think that's my dad's favorite wrestler of all time.
I'd like to see her
George
do...
George the Animal Steel, too.
A Junkyard Dog impression.
Maybe next time she's on, we'll have her do that. We'll give her some time to work on it. Mike Rodak, who's your all-time favorite wrestler?
Stone Cold Steve Austin. Open a can.
Jonah, do you have a favorite?
You know, I grew up in the Hulk Hogan era. I was a fan. I wouldn't say now I like him as much as I used to, but, you know, when I was at the age where Mike was a big Stone Cold Steve Austin fan, I was a Hulk Hogan Hulkamaniac.
Yeah, I think when I was really into wrestling, it was Sergeant Slaughter for me. He's the guy that I always look forward to watching.
One of the greatest angles of all time.
It's one
the,
of those things.
Iraqi sympathist.
You call that great.
Well, it was awesome. It wasn't great. You know what I mean. You know, great storyline.
That's what wrestling's all about. You have to disconnect yourself from the fact that this is real sport. You have to get into the storylines, and that's when I get together and I've seen WrestleManias before, and it's like that's. I used to think that wrestling was because it was fake, that people who were into wrestling were like I just didn't get it, But then once you're around them, and I have so many friends who are into pro wrestling, that I get into it. Like, I was like, all right, we can do this. You can actually take this leap and get into this little fantasy world the same as you would any other television
show.
Well,
it's like,
or a movie.
The other day, the movie Bloodsport, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Would you be like, well, I don't like those movies. Those are fake fights. Yeah, Rocky's fake. I can't watch that movie.
You got to watch it like you're a 12-year-old. It's the best way.
Yeah, that is it. It takes you back to that, in a sense.
That's
right?
When you started watching it anyways, right? I mean, I was watching since I was probably 4 years old.
And it's fake because real wrestling, when it was real in the 30s and 40s, was boring.
It's boring.
And
a lot of people say
the history of wrestling
stuff,
and boxing
too.
Went back and forth between one being legitimate, one being illegitimate, until it kind of got to where we are today.
All right, we're running late. Any last predictions, Ryan?
No, I think I'm
any
good.
Any big surprises? You want to predict any big,
I think Undertaker's going to arrive on his motorcycle, and Daniel Bryan will have a heel turn.
Okay. Well, we're watching for that. Great show today.
Thanks for having me.
Good stuff.
Thank you to Bobby Rosati for having all the music ready to go. It's seamlessly shifting.
I luckily have had a little experience with that in my day.
Mike Rodak, Crooked co-host from ESPN.com. He was here for the whole show.
Big Crooked.
As was Jonah Bronstein from the Buffalo News, handling things on Facebook Live, where you can see a live stream of this and all previous Tim Graham shows. And big thanks to Lindsay Darkangelo for calling in, talking college hoops in the first hour. When we come back next week, we'll have, probably some more draft talk. Maybe there'll be some more trades to discuss. But there's always something on the Tim Graham Show. And big thanks one last time to Ryan Stitt from Elmo's for
coming
in.
Thanks for having me on.
You know what? He's not Ryan Stitt from Elmo's. He's just Ryan Stitt.
Barbell, I own you.
Yeah.
I own you.
Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan.